graduation speaker. It's a growing trend. Rudolph Bell joins us to tell us why he and other faculty objected to Condoleezza Rice speaking at the Rutgers University commencement this year. She recently withdrew her name. Then Greg Lukianoff, president of FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, weighs in on what he calls the disinvitation season. Stay with WHYY in Philadelphia for more after the news from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jim Howard. A video, purportedly of some of the abducted Nigerian girls, has been released. The BBC's Gordon Carrera has more.
Around 130 girls are shown in the video. They are seated outside wearing dark hijabs, reciting the first verse from the Quran and holding their hands out in Islamic prayer. This represents about half of the more than 200 girls who were taken a month ago, many of them reported to be Christian. Three of the girls speak directly into the camera, looking uncomfortable, two saying they were Christian and had converted to Islam, another saying she was a Muslim. One says they'd not been harmed. It's not clear when the video was made or where it was filmed.
The BBC's Gordon Carrera reporting. EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels today have imposed sanctions on 13 more individuals and two companies in connection with the ongoing tensions in Ukraine. But those same foreign ministers are split on whether and when to push additional sanctions on Russia. Britain's William Hague says EU leaders will be watching Russia's reaction to the planned presidential elections later this month.
It's very important for us to demonstrate that we are ready for that third tier of sanctions, for more far-reaching sanctions, depending on Russia's attitude towards the elections on the 25th of May.
Pro-Russian organizers say 96% of voters in two eastern Ukrainian areas voted for autonomy yesterday. While Russia says it respects the outcome, Ukraine and its Western allies reject the vote as illegal. A British satellite company is offering free tracking for commercial airlines. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports this comes after the disappearance of the Malaysian airliner 2 months ago.
Right now, commercial jets are mostly tracked using ground-based radar. Satellite tracking has long been available, but airlines have resisted it, partly because of the cost. Now the company Inmarsat says it'll offer the service for free. Airlines would still have to pay for hardware to transmit an airplane's position. This kind of tracking could prevent future cases like the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Inmarsat has been key in the search for that missing plane. Since the disappearance, the International Air Transport Association has convened a panel to explore how to implement a global tracking system for planes. The task force is supposed to release its conclusions by the end of the year. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, London.
In Denver, snowplows are working to clear roadways after a storm dumped more than a foot of snow on some parts of the Rockies. Tornadoes hit areas of the Midwest over the weekend, and in Southern California, forecasters say dry conditions, high winds, and triple-digit temperatures are increasing the risk of fire. Chrysler is reporting a net loss of $690 million in the first quarter due to charges related to its merger with Italian carmaker Fiat. Excluding those various charges, the company reported earnings of $486 million compared to $166 million last year. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 107 points at 16,688. This is NPR News.
For NPR comes from PBS. Frontline tells the story about the government's secret surveillance of millions of Americans. United States of Secrets, tomorrow at 9 on PBS.
It is warming up, 75 degrees now on Independence Mall in Philadelphia at 10:04. I'm Jennifer Lynn, WHYY News. The Philadelphia Orchestra will close out its season with a three-week trip to China, Japan, and Taiwan. This will be the first time the orchestra's new music director, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, will lead a tour through the Far East. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports.
A string trio from the orchestra is gearing up with some Beethoven at the announcement of what has become an annual China tour. For the third year running, the orchestra will visit China as a residency, which takes the musicians off the stage to directly engage with the Chinese public. And for the first time since he signed on as music director 2 years ago, Yannick Nézet-Séguin will join the musicians.
Everywhere I go in the world, when I conduct in Europe, when I conduct in Asia, when I conduct anywhere else, everybody's talking about the Philadelphia, the Philadelphians, and everybody's eager to hear it again and again, to keep that place internationally and take it even to a next level is really one of our most important missions.
In addition to the 10 concerts in 7 cities throughout China, Japan, and Taiwan, members of the orchestra will also offer master classes, perform at schools and hospitals, as well as play the new work by the Chinese composer Tan Dun. It's about an underground language called New Shu, a language which has been maintained secretly by women of the Hunan province. It's been handed down from mother to daughter for generations. The orchestra premiered the work in Philadelphia last fall. Orchestra president Allison Volgamore says the ensemble will perform the piece in the province where the language originated.
This piece, which was commissioned by the Philadelphia Orchestra, it is our gift to take back to the good friends in China, a real moment of authentic cultural exchange.
The orchestra will be touring from May 21st through June 5th. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
In sports, the Philadelphia Phillies are off today, home with the Angels tomorrow. Here's the WHYY forecast. Today, some sunshine, a chance of afternoon thunderstorms, a high of 86 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of a thunderstorm, a low of 66. In Philadelphia, we have sun and 75 degrees. At 10:06, this is WHYY.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice just withdrew her name as Rutgers University commencement speaker this year after members of the faculty and some students objected. She was also to receive an honorary degree. Some students at Haverford College are objecting to their graduation speaker this year because of how he handled student protests at a California university a few years ago. And last year, the commencement speaker for Swarthmore withdrew his name after campus protests. What's happening here in the Delaware Valley has been happening on college and university campuses in other parts of the country. So today on Radio Times, who gets to be a commencement speaker? And we begin our conversation with Rudolph Bell. He's a distinguished professor of history at Rutgers University. In fact, he co-led the faculty protest against the university's graduation invitation to Condoleezza Rice. He's been at Rutgers since 1968. And Rudy Bell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. So why did you oppose Condoleezza Rice as commencement speaker?
Well, we felt that she was inappropriate as a representative of the values for which Rutgers University stands. Our primary concern was, in fact, with the awarding of an honorary doctorate of laws degree, which requires, which certainly specifies criteria that she does not remotely meet.
When you talk about values, what kind of values are you talking about?
Commitment to truth and to human welfare.
And is it, I mean, does it have to do with the Iraq War? Does it have to do with her time in the Bush administration?
Our primary concerns were the untruths which she knowingly told that as justification for the war in Iraq. She knew there were no nuclear weapons. Many others voted for the war, but they didn't. They were lied to. She was the author and perpetrator of the lies. And her record on condoning enhanced interrogation techniques, which she calls enhanced interrogation techniques, but the rest of the world calls torture.
She, as I understand it, she declined to do a Q&A with some of the students and perhaps even some of the faculty. Do I have that right?
Are you referring to the president of the university?
Well, I'm referring to some of the articles that I read about the controversy about both her invitation and disinvitation.
Yes. Go ahead.
Well, so we're talking about her just as a standalone graduation speaker and also the idea of her getting an honorary degree. Was there anything else that the faculty and you objected to?
Well, we objected to the circumstance of a commencement by a highly controversial person engaged in what was not an exercise in academic freedom. No one has the right by academic freedom to receive an honorary degree or to speak at commencement. And what we did state from the outset was that in a setting where there was open question and answer or a debate situation, she and her views would be absolutely welcome. In fact, your next guest has spoken at Rutgers, and we'll just happily invite it. So this is a very open campus.
So what you're talking about is her as a commencement speaker. If she were invited to speak to the university on a non-commencement day, that would not be a problem?
Absolutely not.
And does her time with the Bush administration and the things that you object to, does that disqualify her other accomplishments as an African woman, young girl growing up in the South, her time in academia as well?
Those were all wonderful things to talk about. And believe me, Marty, I would have preferred to be leading the opposition had the invited speaker been Donald Rumsfeld, her colleague. But that's not the way it is. And the fact is that when she rose to a position of power, and she's a person with great ambition, she used that power, and she was definitely the most intelligent person in the room when there were any discussions with the president about Iraq or about use of torture, for evil consequences.
I'm not sure how commencement speakers are chosen at Rutgers University. Is that a board decision? Is that a presidential decision?
Well, it used to be a decision that involved 20 faculty who combed widely and came up with candidates that had some student representation that were widely perceived as being appropriate for commencement. It was changed by the current president, who found the earlier system inefficient. He generally finds consultation with faculty and students inefficient. And they're reduced to 6 people, including himself, so he was advising himself. And the decision was made 2 years ago and kept secret until last February, at which point it was announced as unanimously approved by the Board of Governors. It is absolutely the Board of Governors' right to make the decision, but it has been forever the tradition to involve wide student and faculty consultation, and that was what was changed.
Well, it sounds like you have larger objections to the president of Rutgers University and how he handles these kinds of decisions.
I think that the decision-making is a consequence of his style, yes, and I think that the brouhaha after Dr. Rice declined over whether Eric LeGrand or Tom Kane, both of whom we're not raising any objections to, I think that kind of failure to consult and talk to people, it's true, academics are a little bit inefficient, and we love to have conferences, but we get there eventually. We had many good speakers. I've been attending commencements since it's 46 years, and some have been more notable than others, but that's to be expected.
What about the and I'm sure you've heard this before, and this should be college campuses, should be places where people can, unpopular people can talk about their opinions, controversial ideas and controversial people can find a place there where they can at least be heard. One of the criticisms of what the faculty did at Rutgers and some of the students as well is that it didn't embrace the kind of academic freedom that should be on a college campus.
That is to misstate the issue. Once it's recognized that Condoleezza Rice was welcome on 364 days a year, or even the same evening as commencement, but commencement is not freedom of speech. Freedom of speech involves, academic freedom involves dialogue and exchange of ideas. There's no exchange of ideas in a commencement speech, and certainly not in the awarding of an honorary degree, which says we stand with this person's accomplishments.
If she had, I mean, she did withdraw, it should be said, but if she had not withdrawn, what would you as a member of the faculty have done at commencement day?
My intention was to not attend the commencement because I did not wish to personally involve myself in making the day uncomfortable and distasteful for the thousands of graduates whose day it's supposed to be. I believe others would have followed a different approach.
Such as?
One, I imagine that Dr. Rice figured out clearly that in an open stadium with 40,000 people, there would be no way to control loud noise, visible marching out of the stadium, all sorts of things. She speaks in very controlled environments, Marty. I mean, no public university has invited her to be its commencement speaker in the last 6 years. That tells you something.
Do you think, though, and we're going to get into this with Greg Lukianoff,
right,
who's waiting in the wings here, but in terms of protest, do you think if there is a graduation speaker that some students object to, that they should shout at them or try to drown out what they're trying to say?
No, I think that is inappropriate for a commencement. I think a commencement should be a celebration of the graduates and of their accomplishments. My own view is that universities were much better off when they had the most outstanding graduate. Or if they want to try to get some money from prior graduates, it's a great occasion. Pick the most distinguished person from Rutgers graduating class of 40 years ago or 30 years ago.
Do you like the idea of Tom Kane being the speaker?
I think Tom Kane is fine. Tom Kane was a wonderful pro-higher education governor. He's an extremely moderate person, a very good president of a university right here in New Jersey, and the fact that he's Republican, no problem to me.
I could imagine someone objecting to President Obama as a commencement speaker if they objected to NSA surveillance, if they objected to the use of drone strikes against American civilians. I could understand how someone could make, in certain ways, an argument not unlike the argument you're making about Condoleezza Rice.
Absolutely, yes. I don't think that's an appropriate choice either. If he's president, so I know that he's been invited for 2016 May, when he'll still be president. I think that ex officio is fine. Once they're out of office, I think that the objections to, I think Obama would be a divisive speaker. I wouldn't be leading the protest, but I certainly imagine others would.
Why wouldn't you be leading the protest? I'm curious.
Because I think that on balance, President Obama will go down in history in an entirely positive way.
Is that a suggestion to stay away from political people or people that either are in office? I know, other members of this administration, other administrations have given graduation talks.
I think it is a sad commentary on the divisiveness of the American political system that most politicians are poor choices as commencement speakers because they create a divisiveness beyond that which is created by poets or rock singers.
Is that the idea that poets and rock singers are maybe a better way to go?
Well, my own personal view is that it should be the outstanding graduates or former graduates of the university. I also think that the governor of New Jersey, its two senators, and all of its congressmen are also 100% appropriate, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat, because we are at the State University of New Jersey, a public institution, and I believe strongly in having public figures come for commencement. Beyond that, it is unfortunate that Toni Morrison is a better choice than Condoleezza Rice, no question about it.
There were students that were supportive of Condoleezza Rice, and I'm sure there were members of the faculty as well, that they welcomed the idea of her as commencement speaker. What's your response to them?
Well, that is absolutely true. We did a survey. The union undertook a survey, and about two-thirds of the faculty favored rescinding the invitation, but a third did not and welcomed having her speak. The problem is that commencement is not academic freedom. It is an honoring of an individual who would have caused great discomfort and distress to many of the people in the audience. Not appropriate for a day of celebration.
Do you think there's too much focus on commencement speakers? And I'm thinking about all the speeches that are given that, the graduates barely or rarely ever remember what was said when they graduated from college.
Yes, I do. And I think that that is the reason in part that what from many places it's the valedictorian or the salutatorian. I think that's an appropriate way to do things. Some universities, the president gives the speech every year since presidents almost never have any contact with students. So why, that sounds like a good idea to me, too.
Have you ever protested a commencement speaker before?
Yes.
Who?
Way back in 1970 or so.
Oh, who was that?
I think it was in connection with the Vietnam War, and it wasn't the speaker itself. It was the entire ceremony.
Oh, interesting. Well,
we wore black armbands, which are hard to see with all those chevrons and the other stuff that academics parade around in, but we did wear black armbands.
And indeed. And the graduation is next week, yes?
It's Sunday. Yes.
On Sunday. Well, Rudolph Bell, thank you for joining us on Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
You're more than welcome.
And he's a distinguished professor of history at Rutgers University, co-led the faculty protest against the university's graduation invitation to Condoleezza Rice. She did withdraw from speaking at the university, and former Governor Tom Kaine is their graduation speaker. We have a guest waiting in the wings, and we want to hear from you. Who gets to be a commencement speaker and why? 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art proudly supports WHYY and presents Art After Five, a blend of jazz and international entertainment every Friday. This Friday features Farah Siraj, who has been named Jordan's musical ambassadress and spreads the message of peace and unity through her Arabian flamenco jazz music. Art After 5, presented by the Philadelphia Museum of Art, beginning at 5:45. More details are available online at philamuseum.org.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital is proud to support WHYY. With a hospital dedicated just to neuroscience, Jefferson treats complex disorders of the brain and spine with advanced technologies and research. Jefferson's multidisciplinary team of neurology specialists devises individual treatment plans for patients with everything from aneurysm to epilepsy. Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. To make an appointment or for more information, the number is 1-800-JEFF-NOW or online at jefferson.edu.
Natural Lands Trust supports WHYY and invites you to find yourself outside. With 42 nature preserves spanning eastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey, Natural Lands Trust is a getaway to nature. To learn more about preserves, upcoming events, and how your support can help save open space, natlands.org. That's natlands.org. Natural Lands Trust. Land for life.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. It is graduation season, a time to celebrate student achievement. And at a number of colleges and universities this year, disinvite or protest the graduation speaker. And joining us now is Greg Lukianoff, and he's president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, also known as FIRE, author of Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of the American End of American Debate. And Greg Lukianoff, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, joining us from NPR down in Washington.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And we were talking with Rudolph Bell, one of the protesters, faculty protesters, so who did not like the idea of Condoleezza Rice as the graduation speaker at Rutgers University. And I'm just curious, from your perspective and focusing solely on Rutgers University,
sure,
what your response is to that.
Well, it's difficult to focus entirely on
Rutgers. Well, let's start there anyway.
Sure. Well, that essentially... what we see at FIRE is this lack of tolerance for people of diverging opinions, and I feel like it the larger picture, when we see this happen every year, so much so that it's sort of an inside joke within FIRE that we're entering disinvitation season. So in that sense, sort of the Rutgers the hubbaloo that happened this spring was only different from other years that we've seen because it started even earlier. People started complaining about the invitation to Condoleezza Rice as soon as it actually started happening. But it just seems like every year this season gets more and more intense.
Well, picking up on what Rudolph Bell was saying, is that a commencement speech is not, from his perspective, about freedom of speech or even academic freedom.
Right.
It's really about honoring somebody, giving them an honorary degree, and boiled down, it sounds like, that was the main objection.
Here's the interesting thing about it. I'm a First Amendment lawyer. I'm specialized in it. But it's interesting to watch how people's rhetorical styles change depending on what suits their needs at the time. So a professor, in a lot of cases, will argue for a very expansive definition of academic freedom until it doesn't necessarily suit them. So sometimes people conflate First Amendment and freedom of speech when they're not exactly the same thing. And one of the things I've been writing a lot for the Huffington Post about is how we're confusing the two terms. And freedom of speech does include some of these old-fashioned ideas. ideas. Like, let's hear someone else out. Let's see if someone has something interesting to say. Let's not prejudge it before deciding that they can't speak here. And unfortunately, I think it's part of a symptom of having a more sort of knee-jerk culture that we're not taking the time to say, I don't know, maybe the speaker who I utterly disagree with might have some interesting insight into something I haven't thought of.
Well, and picking up on what you said, I mean, under that definition, then almost anyone could be invited. I mean, you know, you could have a member of the Nazi party. Let's find out what they have to say about life, for instance.
Yeah, the Nazis definitely come up a lot in hypotheticals.
Yeah, I figured.
But generally, we're talking about people who are very accomplished enough to be able to get an honorary degree. So, and it's interesting, when you sort of start going down the rabbit hole of who can and can't be disinvited, as the previous speaker said, you know, you end up having the conclusion that, you know, Obama can't be invited, no one from the Bush administration can be invited. You start actually reaching a point where pretty much nobody who's actually done anything of note in public life can safely be invited. And what I'm afraid the situation that we're creating is a situation which there was one university that actually invited Kermit the Frog.
Oh, really?
To speak at a commencement agreement.
Well, that's a safe way to go, I guess.
That's exactly. And to me, it would be sad if we have an environment on campuses that are so sort of touchy to anybody who's actually been involved in public life that you're pretty much restricted to only inviting Kermit the Frog.
But what about the idea? I mean, there are many accomplished people that don't have any political background or even baggage.
Right.
Certainly people that have lived important and lives that have changed other people's lives, or poets or artists, people like that.
Right. Well, Dustin Lance Black was recently disinvited from Pasadena College because and he's not a politician, and he was disinvited because people found explicit photos of him on the internet. It seems like we do have sort of a hair trigger for what can get you disinvited these days. Meanwhile, when a university tried to invite James Franco, the famous actor, he was disinvited because he was found not to be august enough. And it actually reaches the point where you have to start wondering, from the perspective of these speakers, why on earth they'd want to be invited if they're going to get this kind of reception in the first place.
So who gets to decide? I mean, when you boil it down to who picks the graduation speaker, what do you think is a fair process for that decision, knowing that you're not going to please everybody?
That's a great question. I mean, definitely you can try student votes. In some cases, you can leave it up to the president. I would just be happy if we had a little bit of the sense of, you know, no matter who's invited, if they're, you know, someone of great accomplishment, that we hear out what they have to say. It's a very old-fashioned idea, but I think it would make the environment on campuses a lot more tolerable and a lot more conducive to, you know, wisdom, for one thing, but also for debate and discussion. But I think it's something our entire society could learn, and I think, unfortunately, our campuses sometimes model the opposite of how we should actually handle political and personal difference.
I keep going back to Rudolph Bell, but he's the one that got our conversation started,
right,
saying that, you know, on 364 days of the year, he would be happy to have Condoleezza Rice.
I don't believe that.
You don't? You don't?
Maybe Professor Bell himself would be, but the we call this disinvitation season, but that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. This happens all year round, and we've compiled, you know, we started keeping track of student speaker controversies, and it lasts all year round. So, for example, a big example of this from the fall was Ray Kelly, police commissioner of New York, was invited to speak at Brown in the fall. Some students were outraged about this. Now, I want to give a caveat here. I'm a civil liberties lawyer. I oppose stop and frisk just as much as a lot of the students who objected to Ray Kelly speaking there. But Ray Kelly also added to his agreeing to be there to actually answer an hour full of questions on whatever topic students want to talk about. So there was actually going to be an opportunity for unparalleled access to ask those tough questions. But then instead, after trying to get the Kelly disinvited, after some students tried, when he showed up, the students got together and they shouted him down for half an hour, making it essentially impossible for him to go on with his speech. And what I think is, you know, so many things wrong with this. One is, you know, I'd never support mob censorship. I think that's one of the things that goes against freedom of speech. But from another angle, I just can't imagine how angry those students must have been who were like, now's my chance to actually ask Ray Kelly some tough questions. But because someone wanted to make a symbolic gesture by shouting him down, I never got to ask those questions.
So how do you protest a speaker then? That allows those people who want to hear them, but also allows a student or maybe even a member of the faculty to protest what they are saying.
It's one of those things where it is a question of degree, but as long as you're not preventing other people from hearing the speech and you're not actually preventing it from being able to go on, then, you know, most things are fair game. So, you know, I was protested at a speech one time when I was talking about the Muhammad cartoons, probably one of the only times I've ever been protested. But students in the audience, you know, were holding up signs and they were protesting and picketing outside and marching back and forth. And I completely supported them.
Well, that's it. Now, what were they protesting about you?
They weren't specifically protesting me, but it was a panel defending the right to show the Muhammad cartoons in a discussion about the Muhammad cartoons at New York University. And I, of course, was on the side of how can you talk about these things without looking at them.
Let me reintroduce you. And again, that's Greg Lukianoff. He's a president of FIRE, which stands for the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And he's also the author of a book that came out last year called Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of American Debate. And we invited him to join us to talk about the disinvitation season, as he and other folks at FIRE call this time of year. This is the commencement season, and Rutgers University didn't disinvite Condoleezza Rice, but she withdrew her name because of protests from some members of the faculty and also some of the students as well. And we want to hear from you about who do you think has the right to address students as they graduate from college. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and let us know what you think. Let me pick up on something about Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Mm-hmm. Brandeis actually decided, as I understand it, to revoke her honorary degree because of, I guess, her criticism of Islam.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
It's one of those reasons why I couldn't really separate this from this larger season. The fact that this we used to talk about disinvitation season within FIRE kind of as a joke, but then every year it seemed to get more and more intense. And this year, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, yes, she is an avowed atheist. She grew up Islamic. She experienced female genital mutilation. She had to flee from an arranged marriage. She wrote a book called Infidel, where she talks about her opinion that Islam is very is very discriminatory towards women. That's her position overall on this. And she was disinvited from Brandeis for having an honorary degree there. Now, what I found interesting about this was, one, you always had to remind people that this was part of a very big trend, but also to point out that, two, Brandeis, even though it's a private university, is littered with quotes from the great Louis Brandeis. Louis Brandeis is one of the true heroes of freedom of speech in American history. He has some of the greatest quotes attributable to him about freedom of speech, and these are all over the Brandeis campus. So this is a place that really holds itself out as a place that was willing to take on hard debates and hard discussions. But it also is a school that has an incredibly bad record when it comes to freedom of speech, including a case I talk about in my book, Unlearning Liberty, which is about a student, Professor Donald Hindley. In a class several years ago, he explained, in a Latin American studies class, he explained where an epithet for Mexican Americans came from.
Well, we should say what the word is.
It's wetback.
Wetback, right?
And he explained in the course of the class that actually comes from stories of people swimming across the Rio Grande. Then he criticized its use. So he explained where an epithet came from in a class where it was relevant, and then criticized its use. He was found guilty of racial harassment because a student who heard this, actually, just because he used the word to criticize it, found it offensive. Brandeis has never overturned that harassment finding. And so to us, Brandeis doing something wrong on freedom of speech was no surprise. It's just especially ironic because Brandeis is named after one of the truly greatest heroes of freedom of speech in American history.
Well, and maybe using that example and other universities as well, I mean, do you think that administrations are too willing to sort of knuckle under to critics of either of commencement speakers or other kinds of speakers?
I do, but I think it's, to some level they're sort of reaping what they've sown. One of the things I talk about on Learning Liberty is how common speech codes are on college campuses. And in addition to being sometimes ridiculously broadly written, since we're being played in Philadelphia,
yep.
Drexel University, up until we fought them over this code, had a code that actually banned inappropriately directed laughter. like incredibly
broad. Do you mean
broad.
That? I mean, are you quoting there?
That's a quote, yeah. That's and what's interesting is that was a code that was actually in force at University of Connecticut back in the 90s, and it was laughed out of court when challenged there, but for some reason popped up again in the Drexel University policies 15 years later.
I don't even know what that means. Inappropriately directed laughter.
It means that all of us are guilty of violating the speech code at some point or another. And I think that these kind of codes, they teach people the wrong lessons about freedom of speech. They teach people that being offended is the worst thing that could happen to you and that you might have a right not to be offended. And when you cultivate this idea that you have a right not to be offended, it leads, I think, naturally to the idea that, and that also means nobody who really disagrees with me should speak on my campus.
Well, you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get Phil from Westchester to join our conversation. Phil, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My comment essentially is, in many cases, not many cases, I'd say a lot of cases, there are speakers who are invited to give their opinions on things during commencement, and it appears that the history of these people actually violate the mission of the academic institution. So if you look at the mission statements of the academic institutions, you'll see that there's a big disconnect between them and the people who are invited to speak. And I think that's a problem, that basically the board and the alumni association has to stand up and say, this is what we stand for, and that's why it's under the mission.
Well, Phil, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Greg Lukianoff has to say in response. Do you agree with him at all?
I guess I'm not entirely sure what he means. I think that part of the mission of a university is a certain amount of epistemic modesty, that essentially you approach the world with a sense of skepticism and a sense of vastness of spirit and a sense of curiosity. And if that's the case, then that means there's a good argument to be made for bringing even more interesting, strange, eccentric speakers to campus, not fewer.
Is there a certain profile of the kind of person either who doesn't get invited or gets disinvited to a college or university campus?
Definitely. And it's been interesting because it has been all over the board in our studies of it. But you're definitely more likely to be disinvited if you're either a social conservative or if you're particularly a former member of the Bush administration, it seems.
And why is that?
It's one of these things where I make this, I've seen this all throughout my career. I've been doing this now for 13 years. I think it's partially because universities do tend, in their administration and among professors to lean fairly far left. And I think under those circumstances, people have, if you do have a fair amount of groupthink going on, it's much easier to think that the person who disagrees with you is someone who should be excluded rather than someone who agrees with you.
There's an interesting situation happening at Haverford College outside of Philadelphia. The former chancellor of Berkeley has been invited to be the commencement speaker, and some of the students there objected to the way he and his university handled some student protests a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. The students are saying to this invited speaker that there are nine conditions or nine right. demands. If you're going to speak here, we want you to do things like make a public apology, have some form of reparations to the students who were, I guess, mishandled during those protests. Write a letter to the students. The speaker has said no. How do you understand the back and forth here?
The Bergenau incident, Chancellor Bergenau, by most estimations, is everything a university should want in a speaker. He's a very accomplished academic. He was, and also in that sense, you would think he would be politically uncontroversial. So I was wondering, what are they objecting to Bergenau about? And I forgot about the Occupy protest there.
Right.
And definitely I understand, and I share their anger at a lot of the heavy-handed tactics and some of the police brutality that came out of Occupy in California. But it did show to me that when you start, and it shows sort of like the downward slope that this attitude creates, that if Bergenau is not pure enough, you start wondering who exactly is pure enough to speak on campuses. And then you end up in this problem of if it's a purity test, if saying that if you've taken any controversial opinion or you've done anything controversial in your life, you should not speak on this campus. Well, honestly, the people you're going to want to hear from the most, or maybe that might be the most interesting or most valuable to hear about, are those people who have done controversial things or have been at ground zero when something intense happens.
And we're almost up in a break here. My understanding about Bergenau is that he has been very supportive of minority students, I think even undocumented students at Berkeley during his time at Berkeley.
Absolutely.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation again. Greg Lukianoff is our guest. He's the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, also known as FIRE. And he's the author of Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of American Debate. He's written for a number of publications, including The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, The Huffington Post, as he just mentioned to us. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation and continue with our guests and also with you. So do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Is it possible to get another water?
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
The latest healthcare developments.
How what happens in Washington affects you.
How world events affect us all.
The news continues throughout your day. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. We are your co-hosts for Here and Now. Breaking news, thoughtful analysis, surprising interviews in the middle of your day.
With voices from all across the country so you won't miss a thing.
That's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
People's Light and Theater presents Woody Says, the life and music of Woody Guthrie, May 7th through May 25th. This train is bound for glory, this land is your land. Woody Guthrie showed you can strum a revolution and do it with joy. In this event for all generations, four actor musicians play 15 instruments, perform 25 of Guthrie's songs, and celebrate the fascinating, beautiful, and sometimes tragic life of this American icon. For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. May is the time of year when colleges and universities across the country honor the achievements of their students. But more recently, commencement ceremonies have become a source of contention. And that's what we're talking about with our guest, Greg Lukianoff. You can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY. Why Radio Times, who gets to be a commencement speaker. Let me get Dorothy from Swarthmore to join our conversation. And Dorothy, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hi. There. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had the experience in 1963 of graduating from City College in New York, which is a liberal institution and a public institution. And the graduation speaker was Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Wow.
This was a few days after the assassination of Medgar Evers. And City College, of course, sits at 135th Street in Harlem. I'm just thinking back on this and thinking, I wonder if this would ever have even gone forward in these times because of not only security reasons, but you can't get much more controversial than that.
Well, that's fascinating, Dorothy, and lucky that you got to have Martin Luther King Jr. as your commencement speaker. Greg, do you think that would be a very controversial choice today?
It's kind of funny. In hindsight, of course, it seems ridiculous that Martin Luther King could be controversial. But at the time, who knows? I mean, and particularly the one thing that was beneficial, at least in the 60s, was I think we had a little bit more of a mentality of, you know, we should hear the speaker out. And I think that since we have less of that, and since we become so partisan as a country, and we can be so knee-jerk, you have to wonder if someone of equal stature were to speak today on a campus, if that wouldn't be controversial.
I mean, do you think there's more censorship today than there was back in the 1960s?
Depends on what part of the 1960s you're talking about. Right. I think, you know, the speech code, the free speech movement, really, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of it this year. It's really considered to have started in 1964. And don't get me wrong, I'm not under any illusion that there was ever a perfect golden age for freedom of speech, either on campus or off campus. But I do sometimes joke that there might have been a perfect weekend in 1977 when the old censorship had ended and before the new kind of censorship had started. I do think over on some topics, I think we've backslid quite a bit. And I think I'm a little bit afraid that we've cultivated an environment where we don't have sort of checks and we don't have some of these sort of old-fashioned ideas of hearing each other out, that it makes it more difficult to engage in meaningful discussion.
And what are those topics that you think are sort of off center, whatever the word is?
Well, definitely, you know, on college campuses, it can be practically anything. I mean, right now I'm dealing with a case, just to give you a sense of the absurdity of the kind of stuff I deal with. And I'm, you know, I'm a trained First Amendment lawyer. This is what I went to law school to do. And just a couple weeks ago, I had a case where a student at a college in New Jersey posted a picture of his daughter wearing a Game of Thrones T-shirt that's Daenerys Targaryen, saying, "I will take what is mine in blood and fire," with blood and fire. And she had this picture. He put this picture of his daughter up on Google Plus, and an administrator saw it, thought he'd been emailed it because he didn't understand Google Plus very well. And the professor was suspended and sentenced to mandatory psychological counseling because the administration construed this as a threat.
My mouth is open. My jaw is open. I have to say that doesn't. So, what college or university are we talking about?
It's Bergen Community College up in New Jersey, but it's exactly the same thing that happened in a case at University of Wisconsin-Stout involving a quote from the beloved Joss Whedon show Firefly. And that's the thing. We're in this surreal. I'm perfectly willing, as a First Amendment lawyer who went to, you know, this is my passion, to defend people who are bad people, who are mean people. But it's amazing when I defend free speech on college campuses, how often I'm dealing with stuff that people off campus, they don't even understand. How on earth could you get in trouble for a quote from Game of Thrones?
Which does raise questions about, you know, things like internet postings and mm-hmm. you know, how there are no boundaries of campuses,
right,
or work, even workplaces anymore. Everything is all just this gigantic roiling social media.
Yeah, and it's absolutely become part of the ecosystem on campuses. Will Creeley and I wrote one of the first articles about students getting in trouble for what they post on Facebook, and this was way back in 2006. And I always held out Twitter as the social media platform as the one that forces people to give the benefit of the doubt, because when you see 140 characters, I think that automatically makes someone say, you know, this probably can't tell me the full story, so maybe I should give what the person is saying the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're kidding. Maybe they're being ironic. But the whole cancel Colbert thing made me wonder if you're not even getting the benefit of the doubt on Twitter anymore.
Well, let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We have looks like Dave from Clinton, New Jersey, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Dave.
Hi, yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. My question has to do with the appropriate way, in Fire's opinion, to write a speech code for a university. I mean, obviously, there is thing as hate speech, and that needs to have zero tolerance, and it needs to be punishable by the university. But I also appreciate what you're saying, that it seems to be there geared towards freedom from offense, which isn't guaranteed by anything. And so I would just be interested to hear the speaker's opinion on what the appropriate way to write a speech code is that allows what's reasonable and prohibits what's clearly wrong.
Well, Dave, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Greg, go ahead.
It's one thing that I think is a popular misconception, but pretty much, to my knowledge, pretty much only on college campuses. There's no exception for hate speech in the Constitution. The First Amendment, the Supreme Court has read in no exception for hateful or hurtful speech to the Constitution. It actually is the Supreme Court's been really consistent that highly offensive speech is protected and should be protected. I very much believe that. And particularly what I've seen on campuses only makes me more confident, because when you have such vague terms as hurtful or harmful or offensive
or even hateful,
it's amazing how quickly people in power will co-opt that simply to go after speech they dislike. And my book, Unlearning Liberty, is all about absurd examples, one after the other, of students being punished, and faculty members, for that matter, being punished for speech that you have to scratch your head to figure out how it's offensive in the first place. Now, I also think that we're thinking about, to a degree, freedom of speech wrong, when we go on these sort of crusades to get to sanitize the world of bigoted speech. And part of one of the things I wrote an article for CNET talking about what the major function of free speech is. And one of the major functions is that you know your world accurately. You know what's possible to believe. You know what people actually do believe. And so if you think you can, for one, it's incredibly naive to think that you can get rid of bigoted speech by simply making it illegal to say things that are bigoted. That's not going to solve anything, and it will lead to two distortions. One, some people will claim it's fixed, and that's, of course, ridiculous. But then other people will think that the situation of hate must be much worse than it is. And this is something that John L. Jackson wrote in a book called Racial Paranoia.
Oh, yeah. We know him. Yep.
Because the only thing that's holding back this tremendous tide of racism are the speech codes. Meanwhile, I take a sort of an epistemically humble approach to hateful speech. It's very valuable to know who the bigots are and what they think and why. And the idea that we've gained from depriving ourselves of that knowledge to deal with a serious social issue, I think, is naive.
But so is the response then to hate speech more speech?
Absolutely. And it also comes from some amount of, you know, I do, as a First Amendment lawyer, have some amount of populist confidence. And what I've seen time and time again, people will give up, you know, the awful Westboro Baptist Church as an example of speech that they kind of think shouldn't be protected. But I've been to protests where the Westboro Baptist Church has been, and the numbers of counter-protesters to actual Westboro Baptist Church members, it was something like 100-1. So I'm actually more confident that racist speech won't do that well in the marketplace of ideas. But by trying to actually squelch it, you're actually missing some of the point.
We have an email from Liz. I feel the process of selecting speakers needs to be revised and structured better. Sounds like going back to Rutgers and probably other college and university campuses. I know you don't like speech codes, but do you think that process should somehow be cleaned up, or there should be more advisors involved in that process?
You know, I'm pretty agnostic on what the right approach to it is. And here's my guess, though. I don't think there's any approach you can get on the Courage College campus that would not lead to something like disinvitation season. I think that it's so easy to go wrong of some constituency on a college campus these days that no matter how much you perfect the system, unless you change cultural attitudes about hearing people that you disagree with, that this is just going to keep happening.
But so one of the arguments that are coming even from Rudolph Bell is you know, how about a faculty member, the president of the college, the former president of the college and former governor of New Jersey, Thomas Kane, is going to be their graduation speaker. So it seems like there are still a lot of choices that a university has.
I think if we're going down this road, it's going to get fewer and fewer. And once again, I think it's all going to be Kermit the Frog at some point.
It's all going to be Kermit the Frog. Although I wouldn't mind that graduation. Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Greg Lukianoff, and again, president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, also known as FIRE. And he's also the author of a book called Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of American Debate. And we've been talking about the numbers of people who have either been disinvited to be a graduation speaker at a college or university, or withdrew their name, as Condoleezza Rice did at Rutgers University. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get Arya from Haverford to join us. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm interested in the fact that this conversation has turned almost entirely to a conversation on freedom of speech, which is a very perplexing and important topic to talk about.
Indeed.
But the original argument was about the rightness of, I mean, the propriety of students and faculty protesting the granting of an honorary degree to someone. That's what's going on at Haverford right now. Not so much about speech, but about the colleges honoring somebody who should or should not be honored. And that's what I thought was going on with Condoleezza Rice.
Well, and we did. I appreciate the call, and we did, certainly did touch on that. Are you talking about Robert Bergineau, are you?
Yeah, that's right, Robert Bergineau. I mean, I'm not suggesting that the topic about freedom of speech isn't important.
Right.
I just want to urge that we keep the topics distinct from one another. And it seems to me that Mr. Luciano, who, well, as we now now know as a First Amendment lawyer, is obviously interested in freedom of speech. But the other question about whether a faculty and students have the right to have a hand in determining who their institution honors by giving an honorary degree to seems to me to be a very important one. And that's what happened with Condoleezza Rice.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Do you object to Robert Bergenau being honored at Haverford?
Well, I'm not in a position to say that.
Okay.
I certainly am not happy with the decision altogether, but it's a very complicated and decision, and I think that the faculty and students are now considering it. So I don't want to say that I object to this point, but I want to say that we have the right, certainly, to make that determination.
Fair enough. No, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Greg Lukianoff, do you agree that they have the right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that I started writing about this. We've been talking about it internally for years. And, I started writing about this for the Huffington Post a couple of months ago. And one thing I usually always make a point of saying is that students are absolutely within their rights to, and faculty members, to object to a speaker and to protest a speaker. But when this happens so often, and that's one of the reasons why I had to talk about this more as a trend, I think it says something bad about our tolerance for people we disagree with. And one thing that I think you just heard that caller do is that it's interesting to watch people toggle between, if free speech is on their side and they feel like their free speech has been trampled upon, they suddenly come out with a very expansive, beautiful, almost poetic point of view. But when it's someone that they don't want to speak on campus, they're incredibly good at actually suddenly making it a much more technical, narrow argument about whether or not faculty have, students have the right to. And I want to be clear, faculty and students do have the right to protest to it, but I do think it says bad things about our tolerance for dissenting opinions on college campuses.
We have an email from John, says, I don't think the issue at Rutgers has anything to do with free speech. I think it's a moral issue. It sounds like he might
free
agree.
Free speech is a moral issue.
Well, I would agree with that as well. But I think what we heard from Rudolph Bell was that they objected to her association with the Iraq War, the
right.
untruths that led up to the war. And he didn't talk about this, but I know this was also an issue having to do with harsh interrogation techniques that she didn't stand up to that.
Yeah, and definitely I understand that. I mean, I personally oppose all of that too, and it's something I've made no bones about. But that's one of the reasons why you can't divorce it from the bigger picture. People who are trying to get Condoleezza Rice disinvited shouldn't understand that they are part of a bigger movement. This is happening on campuses all across the country that does lead you to wonder if you can invite someone who has. And I mean, and this is interesting because if you look at Condoleezza Rice, let's actually, I'll answer your first question last. Condoleezza Rice, her personal story is amazing. She grew up in Jim Crow South. Just the fact that she grew up in Jim Crow South and became the provost of Stanford, my alma mater, is an amazing story all by itself. In a commencement speech, the possibility of you don't usually talk about politics. You talk about personal lessons. And I think that there was a real possibility that you could have had an incredibly interesting speech, but that would only be more interesting because you may so fundamentally disagree with her on other things.
Well, and I guess and we're almost out of time here, is whether you're invited because of the totality of your life or because certain sections of your life are so exemplary.
Right. Well, and it was interesting when my vice president was on Huffington Post, when he started actually toggling off the people who could not be invited, it was almost impossible to name someone who's had a serious involvement in public life that they thought should be, whether it's Hillary Clinton or anyone in the Obama administration or even business leaders. There was always some objection, and that's an end that we want to prevent.
Well, Greg Lukianoff, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. He's the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, author of Unlearning Liberty. We began our conversation with Rudolph Bell. He's a history professor at Rutgers University, co-led the faculty protest at Rutgers, the protest of inviting Condoleezza Rice as their commencement speaker. I should add that she withdrew her name. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us in this hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.